supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Many students on college campuses in the Philadelphia region and across the country reacted to Donald Trump's election with protests, candlelight vigils, and creating safe spaces to process the surprising results. WHYY's Katie Culinary checked in with Republican students to see how they're reacting.
Austin Severns is a senior at Temple University, where he says it feels like a cloud has been hanging over for the past 2 weeks.
I think the tone on campus is gloomy. People are walking around, there's a lot of protests, people seem visually upset about the results of the election.
But not his friends in the College Republicans Club. Severns says they celebrated the election results with a cake, decorated with a message in red icing.
Hillary Clinton is not president. We were very happy about the results.
But why didn't it say Donald Trump is president? Apparently, not every College Republicans Club member was happy with Trump, but they were excited for the GOP. Those who did back Trump say they feel insulted by posts on social media calling his supporters racist and misogynistic, and they think students who are grieving the results with vigils and safe spaces are overreacting. Paige Jan Fortune is a junior at Temple.
This is life, and like somebody got elected who you didn't want. It's 4 years. Thankfully, we live in a country where there's checks and balances.
But while they struggle to understand the reactions of their liberal classmates, the conservative students we spoke to say they have not experienced much harassment on campus. Matthew Franey, a sophomore at St. Joseph's University, says he wore his red Make America Great Again hat every day the week of the election just to see what kind of reactions he'd get.
There was a man from the neighborhood. He was jogging through and he stopped me and said, I know you're happy about the other night. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. I was incredibly happy. He's like, yeah, let's see what we can do. You know, we should really give him a chance.
Franey thinks there's what he calls an unspoken majority of people who feel the same way. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
While many are relaxing with loved ones over the Thanksgiving holiday, it can be a busy time for those dealing with the byproducts of those feasts, as WHYY's Alana Gordon explains.
Those Thanksgiving scraps have to go somewhere. That can make for a rather busy holiday for plumbers like Bernie DeGabriel.
Can I sing the rap for you?
DeGabriel is working today, but is in good spirits. So much so, he wanted to sing me his plumber anthem. I could not resist.
You ready?
Yeah.
We install sinks, bathtubs too, hot water tanks, just for you. So let my plumber be your plumber. We'll do it in the winter, fall, spring, and summer.
DeGabriel says the Wednesday through Friday of Thanksgiving can be...
Yeah, unbelievable.
He's received some 20 calls so far. Many come from panicked families with drain malfunctions.
Yeah, I'm on a job. I'm unclogging a sink. They put turkey bones and stuffing down there. We got to unstop this sucker.
He says a lot of people overload their drains with greases and other food. And many then forget to run water right before and after running the garbage disposal.
You know, I don't want to offend anybody by telling them you really don't know how to use it. I just say, listen, this is the proper way of using it, you know?
But it's not just plumbers working the holiday. Jim Kelly is a Coatesville supervisor for Pennsylvania American Water Company.
I mean, there's always someone manning that water plant and always someone manning that sewer plant to take care of everybody.
He says when all that excess food and waste goes down the drain and makes it to their plant, it means more work to ensure the water is clean when it gets discharged into those streams. It's for that reason that some in the industry have renamed Black Friday, Brown Friday. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
For years, public health experts have been concerned that Marcellus Shale gas development could be making nearby residents sick. As scientists begin to compile more data, health questions have only intensified. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports that some doctors want to put a pause on fracking and embark on a more intense effort to study its impact on health.
A few years ago, Walter Tsu began to worry about the impact of drilling on the health of people near gas wells. The Philadelphia doctor was alarmed by the idea of fracking waste potentially contaminating groundwater. Tsu wrote a resolution for the Pennsylvania Medical Society, which represents around a quarter of the state's doctors, calling for a moratorium on new hydraulic fracturing. It didn't go over well.
People said, you know, they built a new wing to my hospital now, and I really, really can't say anything bad about gas drilling, and it's too early for us to say anything because it's just started in our communities.
The medical society declined his resolution, but this fall the group reversed course, calling for a moratorium on fracking, making it the society's official position. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf opposes a moratorium, as does the oil and gas industry. The industry warns a moratorium would harm the state's economy and points out that increasing natural gas use leads to less air pollution from coal. Fracking can contribute to ambient air pollution, and for years, people near well pads have complained about health impacts. Tsu is a member of the group Physicians for Social Responsibility. The group has received funding from the Heinz Endowments, which also funds the Allegheny Front. Tsu says the best thing for the state would be to put a pause on new drilling.
I think we have to really rethink carefully about whether this is the right thing to do.
The medical society is also calling on the state to fund a registry on shale-related health complaints, as well as more research. Improving public health surveillance on this issue is crucial, says Ralph Schmelz, a retired endocrinologist from Pittsburgh and past president of the Pennsylvania Medical Society. At a recent conference on fracking and public health, Schmelz said when the drilling boom first came to the state, there just wasn't that much research on how it could impact health.
In the last, you know, 7 or 8 years, there's been an explosion of research in the area.
Recent NIH-funded studies showed increased hospitalization rates and incidence of asthma and premature birth near fracking sites. But Schmelz has a word of caution about those studies.
But we still have tremendous difficulty because those symptoms are very common symptoms. Asthma is very common. Exacerbations of asthma are common. You know, headaches are common. Migraine headaches are common.
Basically, just because there's a correlation between fracking and health symptoms, that doesn't mean fracking is the cause. He says more and greater studies are needed to help iron out this question. That's where a health registry would help. The idea for a registry was first floated 5 years ago by former Governor Tom Corbett's administration, but the state legislature chose not to fund it. The legislature changed course slightly last year, giving $100,000 to the Department of Health for a stripped-down version of a registry.
We're open for business to hear of any concerns or complaints.
Rachel Levine is Physician General of Pennsylvania. She says in the last 2 years, the Department of Health has received over 100 complaints from Pennsylvanians who said fracking nearby was making them sick. That includes reports of rashes, nosebleeds, and anxiety. Levine says while the registry is picking up more shale-related health complaints, it's just not enough to put a pause on the fracking industry the way the Pennsylvania Medical Society wants it to do. How much data would the state need to call for a moratorium?
I guess if there were consistent studies with compelling data that showed a clear and present danger, then we would certainly bring that to the administration's attention and consider that.
Meanwhile, the Medical Society's call for a moratorium will stay on the books, and Walter Tsu says he hopes the state government will take notice. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
If the day after has you reaching for the Rolaids, you're in good company. Let's digest American perceptions about weight and other weighty matters with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Hope your Thanksgiving was just fine. Are you in the cohort of those who say they ate too much and are now reluctant to hop on the scale?
Yes, absolutely.
Me too.
What's interesting in our data is that fewer Americans now than in the past, not just after Thanksgiving Day, but in general, want to admit that they're overweight, and fewer also say that they would like to lose weight. Isn't that interesting? Now, that could be good news because Americans are all slimming down, but I don't think so, and I'll talk about that in a bit. I think Americans are just less likely to say that they care about their weight than has been the case in the past, which goes against all the evidence from medical science that being overweight is harmful to your health.
Now, specifically, how did Gallup word it? Because are fewer willing to admit that they are overweight, or is it they don't think they are overweight?
Well, we ask Americans, are you overweight? So that's actually their own self-perception. We've often said here at Gallup, we do these by telephone, of course, landline and cell phone. If we were there in person, we might have more admitting that they're overweight because the interviewer would be sitting there staring at them. But at least on the phone, when we call them up, we now have fewer who say they are overweight, who classify themselves as overweight, than was the case, say, a decade ago. To be specific with you, the percentage who say that they're overweight is down to about 37% who will admit that of adults. which is very interesting, right? It's a pretty low number. It was up to in the mid-40s a couple of decades ago.
Safe to say if fewer people are willing to admit they're overweight, that means fewer are committed to losing weight.
That's right, 54%. But that actually was up close to 60% a decade ago. So the number who want to lose weight is coming down. Shouldn't come as a shock to you, perhaps. Women, 59%. Men, 48% would like to lose weight. So the female side of the equation more likely to say, yes, I need to take some pounds off.
Now, does Gallup ask for self-reported weight from males and females?
We do. And that's quite interesting as well, because we also say, what would you like to weigh? And there is a difference there. The average man, here's the number, in America today, based on our survey, it weighs 194 pounds. That's what they tell us. The average woman in America, according to our survey, tells us that they weigh 158 pounds. Then we said, what would you like to weigh? The average woman would like to weigh 140. So you do the math. The average woman weighs 158, says she would like to weigh 140. So 18 pounds is the precise amount of weight that the average woman in America would like to lose. The average man would like to weigh 182. There's a 12-pound difference between what American men say they weigh now and what they would like to weigh.
Let's expand beyond weight gain or loss and look at overall health.
About 80% of Americans, 8 out of 10 when we call them up, say that they would rate their own physical health as excellent or good, and the percent who say that their own physical health is poor is only 6%. Now, 6% is a lot of people, mind you, but I view it as pretty good news that 8 out of 10 of us say, yeah, we're in good health. And we've tracked that every single year for 15 years now, every November, as a matter of fact, and it hardly budges 1 or 2 points every year. So right at 8 out of 10 of us are in excellent health.
You know, once upon a time, day after Thanksgiving, you'd get a workout going from store to store on Black Friday, though I suspect more and more sales are being done online. What do we know about retail habits on this day and the holiday season in general?
$752 is the exact amount people tell us in the survey we just completed they're going to spend this year. Now, what's interesting is to compare that to previous years, and Dave, that's about average. So based on our data, at any rate, we don't see a dramatic increase in spending. And this would be retail in stores and also online, nor do we see a significant decrease. Looks about average.
About average over what period of time, Frank?
Well, we have been asking this question for a number of years. We had an uptick last year. More Americans said they were going to spend a lot of money. But for the 3 or 4 or 5 years prior to that, right in this mid-$700 range for what you're going to spend is what we've been measuring.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. It might seem that some cities only just stop reeling from the last recession. But how might public officials best prepare now for the next downturn? An expert panel offered some insight recently at the National League of Cities Summit in Pittsburgh. Keystone Crossroads' Emily Previty reports.
One way is through something called stress testing, basically financial modeling to help governments budget resiliently. Moody's Analytics senior economist Dan White explains.
We provide alternative economic scenarios to say, you know, if we go into recession next year, this is what the Pennsylvania economy is going to look like. This is what unemployment will be. This is what disposable personal income would be. And then we use those factors to try and figure out exactly how much tax revenue a city or a state would lose, how much Medicaid spending or other social services spending would increase.
The point is to figure out how much money to save to prepare for the next recession. Having a number backed by research makes this easier because saving often means saying no to funding otherwise worthy endeavors. But White says stress tests are really meant for government entities with big budgets of hundreds of millions of dollars or billions, not the financial plans typical of most of Pennsylvania's 2,500-plus smaller communities, especially when they're distressed.
Stress testing is not something that can help you get out of a problem today. It's a solution that can help you from getting into a problem 5 to 10 years down the road. And so for those small places that are in trouble, if they have a list of 100 things to do, stress testing is probably 97.
That doesn't mean smaller government entities should do nothing.
Local governments in Pennsylvania should be on high alert. I mean, we've got maybe about $250,000 or something, you know, really insignificant in terms of our statewide reserve. which means that when we go into another recession, the state's going to be looking for places to save money, and local government aid may be a big place that they do that.
The Government Finance Officers Association advises putting aside enough money to operate for 2 months, or about 15% of annual expenses. Emily Previty, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station project. This year, the popular NPR feature StoryCorps is sponsoring the Great Thanksgiving Listen, inviting listeners to use an app to record their own stories. This weekend, high school students from across the country are creating personal oral histories by recording interviews with elders, and we're featuring some of those local conversations this week. The holidays are often considered to be an occasion for families to come together, though even the closest families go through tough times. Feelings get hurt, and it's often children that pay the price. When her mom and her favorite aunt had a falling out and suddenly stopped speaking, Fatu Castillo, a high school senior at Science Leadership Academy in Philadelphia, was caught in the middle. As part of the Great Thanksgiving lesson, Listen, Fatu called her aunt, Rosetta Blunt, to figure out how they could remain close.
I guess we're going to start off the conversation. This is really just me asking you about your relationship with your sister, my mom, because she's cut off from you, and I don't want that to be a hindrance.
Your mom is harboring some ill feelings towards me. It's her choice not to speak to me at this moment. I wish it was the other way, but that's the way she wants it right now, and I can't do anything about that. So is there anything else specifically you wanted to ask me about? I mean, in regards to, you know, our relationship?
No, it's just we haven't really been talking lately.
But we weren't very chatty before. It was because I was always over there, right? I was always at the house. Like, we didn't really talk over the phone as much as me being there in person.
Yeah.
We don't need your mother to be the intermediary in our relationship at this point, because, you know, we can reach out to one another directly.
Yeah, that is true. She just really hates it whenever I talk to you.
Yeah, I think that's part of your hesitation, is because you know your mom gets upset that you speak to me. I think that you're old enough and you're mature enough now. You make the decisions, even within your family, about people who you want to associate with.
Yeah. I just want to have a good relationship with you.
Well, I'm never going to shut you out because I'm mad at your mom. I think that's between your mom and I, and it has nothing to do with you.
Well, whatever your relationship with mom is, I just want to stay close to you.
No, our relationship doesn't have to hurt because your mom and I are not speaking. If you want to spend the weekend with me like you used to do, you can do that still. You know what I'm saying?
All right. I understand that now. I really do.
You have my number. You don't have to, you know, you could use it anytime you want. You know, I can't fix this by myself, is what I'm trying to say.
I just wanted to have this conversation with you to clarify some things and to make sure that we weren't going to drift apart like you and mom did. So thank you for talking to me about this.
You're welcome, sweetie. No problem. Anytime, okay? Love you.
Love you too.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. At the controls this week, Bob Alls, Al Banks, and Diana Martinez. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. John Musoni is Assistant Vice President for News Operations, and our News Director is Eugene Son. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us, and have a great holiday weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.